Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact. This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. Today's guest, Megan Lynch, is the CEO of Six Point Creative, a brand strategy agency located in Western Massachusetts that helps family businesses double their business without losing their existing customers or values. As part of her mission to help family businesses break through growth plateaus, Megan has served as an expert advisor to a wide range of food and beverage clients, from fast casual restaurants to artisan cheese manufacturers. Megan was named an Enterprising Woman of the Year in 2019 and enjoys testing her limits as an endurance runner. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, it's so great to talk with another expert who focuses on the same space that I'm in, family-owned businesses. I know you do a lot of work in the food and beverage industry. I know you also do a lot of work in the construction, in the tools and manufacturing space, where I'm mostly in the service space. So I think we're going to have a really interesting conversation, because I think marketing strategy and branding, rebranding, these are things that scare the daylights, I think, out of founder entrepreneurs. Am I right?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So let's start with the fears. What are some of the fears that hold family-owned food and beverage businesses back, or construction-related businesses back, from growth?
Yeah. So I think with any family business, you're dealing with a few main fears when you're thinking about any kind of rebrand or major new initiative, new market, anything like that that's really different than what's happened in the past. So one big one is reputation, and your brand is your reputation, right? So I think that there's always this fear that if we change our name, our look, our positioning, our target market, that somehow that is going to be our way of telling our old customers that we don't care about them, or the relationships that we used to have, that they're not important to us anymore, or the market, that something is, you know, kind of funky with the company and that there's going to be a rumor mill going on. And so there's this huge fear that any kind of major change like this is going to mean damage to the reputation and maybe setting the company back. I think one of the strengths of family businesses, and one of the reasons why I love to work with them, is that relationships are so important to them, and that loyalty piece is so important to them. And this is one place where it can almost like stop them from growing and diversifying, because they're so loyal to kind of that concept of like dance with the one that brought you. So,
well, imagine there's a lot of mistakes that companies go through when they rebrand their business. Especially, gosh, if you change the name of the food or the beverage, or even the look and feel. What are some of the common mistakes that food and beverage businesses make when they rebrand their businesses or any business? I mean, it could be a construction, tool manufacturer. What are some of the common mistakes they make?
Yeah, so I think one of the big ones is to just kind of jump to, we need to change everything. So we need to change our logo, our name, our colors, description. You know, they kind of like throw everything out. Mm-hmm. And again, for a lot of the companies that we work with, they might have been around for, you know, 20, 60, 100 years. And there is loyalty and there is value in different brand assets in the company. And so one of the things that companies really need to pay attention to when they are doing a rebrand is that they need to understand where their current value is, where that brand value lies, so that they don't accidentally change something that actually was a big touch point for customers that actually causes them, let's say, like not to be able to be found on a shelf, or that causes people to say like, oh, you know, I love that. And I was, you know, loyal to that. And it feels like something has changed so drastically that it makes me question, you know, is this company still the same company? So I think, like, particularly with name changes, that's something that we would really only advise if there was a major disconnect between the name of the company and what they do. You know, we've encountered that a few times, but for the most part, we don't usually counsel family-owned businesses to change their name. It's just that there's usually not a big enough return on it, and there's usually a lot of value in the name itself that's not worth changing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure there's a lot of resistance also in changing names. And I'm sure there's cases where the name was based on either a founder's idea, a personal name, a design, that becomes probably pretty challenging. So every brand has got some kind of a DNA, I think. And seems like this is what you're talking about. It seems to look a little bit like rocket science for marketing. How do you go about uncovering a brand's DNA?
Yeah, so we think of the DNA as that do not alter of the brand. Oh, of great. Like, these are the things that if you change in the brand, it will actually set the company backwards. It will not move them forwards.
Okay.
And so we look for that in a few different ways. So we're a big proponent of actually talking to customers, mm-hmm. You know, getting out there and kind of really understanding what a customer values already about the brand, and mm-hmm. also how they see that brand extending into their lives or into the world. You can kind of get a lot of sense of where the elasticity of a brand is, and can mm-hmm. kind of then see, like, does this match up to our strategic plan? So there's a lot of customer listening that goes on. There's a lot of, you know, kind of asset review within the company to just understand what is strong and what is weak, and really start to prioritize those strengths and weaknesses, and then systematically go through shoring up the weaknesses and amplifying the strengths. And then also understand what aspects of, let's say, the story, the history, the values, the intangibles of a company maybe have never been articulated, because a lot of times these companies grow organically for a long time. So their relationships are created at a very, like, one-to-one personal level. So you can get away with not articulating what makes this company special. But then when you grow to a certain point, that doesn't work anymore. You need to be able to do it at scale. So you need a clear articulation of mm-hmm. what makes us special. And, so really working hard with them to craft that story as kind of like cornerstone content that everybody in the company needs to understand, and that the market needs to understand. Again, like, your brand is your reputation, or also to paraphrase Jeff Bezos, it's what other people say about you when you're not in the room. So really making sure that the story, that word on the street, is you can't control it, but you can certainly influence it. And so to influence it as much as possible to make sure that it's aligned with what you want people to be saying about you.
Well, so I'm sure you have a process around this, and I want to dive into that process a little deeper so people can really understand. If you're thinking about changing your brand out, this is a pretty big decision, or you know, or the look and feel of it. And I used to go out and do some marketing work early on in my career when I was starting to develop business plans and marketing strategies. And we kind of came on a number that if we talked to 30 people, that was statistically significant enough that, you know, it was plus or minus 5%. I mean, do you have a number of customers that you feel like you need to talk to really get to a good feel for the brand?
Yeah. What's crazy is that it's 12.
Wow.
That we see diminishing returns after 12. If you're doing interviews, not if you're doing surveying, but if you're doing one-on-one interviews, we start to see diminishing returns after 12. You won't learn anything drastically new. You might learn like little shades of like interesting things.
Interesting.
But you're not really going to dramatically affect the strategy or the trajectory of what you're doing after 12 interviews. So one of the things that's cool is that, like, I mean, it's very accessible. We're not talking about major research studies. You know, when we're working with family brands, we've got to figure out how to do some of these things. You know, where are those points of diminishing return, mm-hmm. and how do we be as thoughtful as we can with their resources? And so the idea of like 12 conversations, I guarantee you will start to see patterns that are very clear and push you in a direction. And you will start to, you know, questions will also emerge that become clearer about, you know, the things that I drill into my team is like asking the right questions is critical. And so sometimes you got to kind of get into it and learn a little bit more before you quite know what are the right questions to ask that are going to push a brand or a company forward. But you'll start to see those pretty clearly after 12 conversations.
Super fascinating to me. So you have a process around, I think, developing and uncovering a brand's DNA. Is that your solve for why brand accelerator system? What is that?
Yeah. So our Solve for Why system it's basically a 9-step system. It's 3 phases. The first phase is all about prioritization. So it's basically taking companies from this sort of like vague feeling of we have opportunity, we need to do something a little bit different. We're not quite sure what or why. And in that prioritization phase, we are systematically zooming in on the most powerful opportunity for them. We're doing those interviews and getting that data that they need to be able to make a smart, informed decision without getting like analysis paralysis. Getting them the market data that they need to be able to understand the landscape that they're playing in, understanding their competitive landscape, and then really starting to architect the strategy and kind of the guardrails for the plan that we're going to be creating. And then once we've done that, then we kind of move on to phase 2. And that is all about alignment. That's when we actually create, you know, their marketing plan and budget. You know, how are they going to take this kind of overarching brand strategy and bring it into life in the world? That's when we do the DNA work to really figure out those guardrails so that both their team and our team and any other kind of vendor partners that they have are all moving in the same direction. Mm-hmm. And then we also will kind of look for gaps in the plan of if there's anything that needs to be executed that they don't have the in-house expertise or that's beyond our team's expertise to execute, will help them figure out. We kind of do this like who, not how. I don't know if you've read that book, but it's a great one about just trying to figure out not so much how do you have to do these things, but who do we need to know, you know, who is the broker, the expert, you know, that we need to kind of bring into the mix in order to make this plan successful. So really kind of fill in any of those gaps that they might have in the team, make introductions, help them vet new partners. And then once we've done that, then it just moves into execution. Once you've kind of done all of that work to prepare, then the execution becomes so much smoother. So then we're just, you know, scheduling out, you know, what needs to be done and when, and who's going to be doing it. And what are the metrics that we're going to be tracking? What does success look like? How do we make sure that we're tracking some leading measures, not just lag measures are after the fact? And I think that that's also one of the big pain points that people have is like, oh, how do I measure success in a brand campaign or in my marketing? You know, like, should I be looking at impressions or should I be looking at, you know, SEO rankings or, you know, kind of what does success look like? So we really help them. It's different for every business, right? So we really help customize a dashboard for them and what they're trying to achieve. And then we just move to kickoff and just start getting things done. So I think that what a lot of companies do is that they just jump to doing things. You know, they get an idea or somebody says, you know, oh, you need to redo your packaging or you need to do SEO work or you need to do a TikTok campaign or whatever. And they just start throwing stuff at the wall.
Yeah.
And basically our process is just kind of like best practices of making sure that they're not wasting money. They're not wasting resources. They're not wasting goodwill with customers, buyers, vendor, you know, like there's all these things that can go wrong when you don't answer the right questions in the right order. So our system is just designed to help make it basically foolproof for companies to be successful when they're evolving their brand or entering a new market or going after a new customer segment.
Interesting. And so all of these pieces, like these nine steps in the solve for why, I guess that the outcome is to get a focused brand that's scalable, where there's the right people in place and there's the right partnerships in place. So does your agency do all that? And I guess the second question is, what does a focused scalable brand look like when it's in place?
So our agency can be as supportive as our clients need. So we can help them with execution. We can support their internal team. Our whole goal is just to kind of like customize everything. So it's, you know, we're providing just the right amount of support when it's going to be most impactful. So we can be as hands-on as we need to be. For what a focused, scalable brand looks like, I think one of the big things is that there will be a clear and common vision of what success looks like. Okay. And that is so important. And I just can't emphasize it enough because I think, again, a lot of companies go into these things and they just think like, well, I don't know, we want to increase sales. But all sales are not created equal. You can get a great placement at, you know, Whole Foods or whatever, but if your margins aren't there, if you have to discount to get it, you know, you would be better off doing something else. So I think being really clear about how the brand and positioning strategy, how the marketing strategy, how the sales strategy all relate back to what's going to be healthiest for the business. And then also there's big questions that need to be answered about, you know, is this a legacy brand or are we positioning this brand to be acquired? You would take two very different approaches if you were going to do one of those things versus the other. So being really clear about what the vision is, what success looks like, and then getting those metrics in place to be able to measure and really drive success towards what it needs to be is super, super critical. And then the other thing is to really have those guardrails for the brand in place. It's as important. I know a lot of people focus on kind of like the brand, like brand guides or brand handbooks where they'll say like, the colors need to be this, or the logos need to be created this way, or these are our fonts. And all of those things are fine. But some of the real critical issues are like, what will this brand talk about or not talk about? What is its sense of humor? What is its story? What are all of some of those things that are, in my mind, much even more important, or at least as important as some of those visual cues? But, you know, if there's some kind of political issue going on, does this brand speak to that issue or does it not? Does it use humor or does it not use humor? If so, what kind? All of those things are really, really important to be able to lay out and document and get clear on, because the more people you bring into the brand as you grow, the more opportunities there are for it to go off the track.
So
setting up those guardrails and being really clear about just mushy things like tone is really important. And being able to, you know, our team is very experienced about being able to find the language to be clear about some of those things that otherwise might just stay like in one person's head of, I know it when I see it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think in family businesses, that's really common. Like, I know what's wrong, but I can't tell you what's right. And so we need to be able to articulate what's right.
I think it's interesting. So, you know, I want to talk about brand promises and guarantees if we could. So, that's something that in the scaling up world of Vern Harnish in his book, Scaling Up, Mastering the Rockefeller Habits, talks about the importance of brand promises, brand promise guarantees. And I think of the big case study we use typically is the Southwest Airlines. Mm-hmm. And when they started, they had these three brand promises that they would have lots of flights, low fares, and lots of fun. And the concept was like, sort of like in Shakespeare, everything was in threes. So there was like three F's there. And then those brand promises could have KPIs around them. They could be measured, you know, do they have the most fun? Do they have like the highest net promoter score? Do they have lots of, do they have more flights going from point A to point B, et cetera? And then, you know, further on, we talk about the importance of guarantees and using them as catalytic mechanisms to get people to maybe buy, try, refer. So how important, and I think of other companies, and there's so many we could go on, like Google, like it's just, it's guaranteed that you're going to probably get the fastest and the best search results. I mean, no one says I'm going to Yahoo something anymore, or I'm going to Lycos or Alta Vista or AOL something. It's like, I'm going to Google it. Mm-hmm. So how important are brand promises and brand promise guarantees in the food and beverage space, or, you know, maybe more important in construction tools? You want to make sure you're going to get the right tool. It's going to work. What are your thoughts on these?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, like, I think for example, one of our clients is a company called Hyde Tools, and they have tools that are guaranteed forever. And so it's kind of like that LL Bean promise of like, hey, like you can send us a tool that you've had for 20 years. And, you know, if it's one of our guaranteed forever tools, like you will get a replacement. And I do feel like if that is important to the DNA of the company, and if that's important to the customer, I think that this is the critical piece that, again, I think sometimes people can like jump to the solution before they do that deep work ahead of time, because just slapping a guarantee on a product is not going to create loyalty. You really need to understand like what, again, like branding is the alignment of what your company values with what your customer values. Like there has to be a connection between those two things. Mm-hmm. And so your job number one is to understand your customer better than anybody else. That is what's going to make a critical difference for you. And once you understand what your customer values and you understand how you connect with that value, then some of the guarantees become self-evident, right? Mm-hmm. One of the tools we use, there's a brand thinker, brand strategist named Marty Neumeier. And one of the things he did a number of years ago was he created a list of 25 brand intangibles that customers value. And so these are things that people will pay a price premium for. And so when we come into family businesses, a lot of what they will say will be like, oh, our customers value our people. or our customer service. And that's not wrong, but it's not specific enough. Like, customer service could mean fast, like you deliver very quickly, or you're always in stock, or you're readily available, or it could mean delight, you know, kind of like the surprise and delight piece. You always add a little something extra, or there's some little twist that's happening, or it could be like a give back thing of, you know, you allow us to, you know, 1% of your profits goes to a certain charity that I care about. But those are the things that customers value. They don't, everybody, you know, if you're thinking speed and I'm thinking delight,
yeah,
but we're both using the term customer service, you have the recipe there for a disconnect. So you could be saying like, well, you know, I'm offering overnight shipping and you're paying a price premium for shipping and you're shrinking your margins, where your customer would love a free sample of an up and coming product that you have, mm-hmm. or, you know, or a handwritten note or something, that that's actually more valuable to them than the quick shipping. And so really getting to know your customer is the critical piece of that. And then once you figured out your customer and you figured out your company's brand intangibles, then we definitely encourage companies to look at their brand intangibles and to start to figure out some of those promises or guarantees around that kind of reinforce their intangibles. So if we're all about delight, then mm-hmm. we need to come up with a promise around delight. If we're all about speed, we need to come up with a promise about speed, but we first right. need to be clear about what we're all about.
I think that's great. God, I just love this. I mean, it takes me back. I know you're in New England, and it takes me back to Ben and Jerry's when they first got started. And probably most people don't know that they raised money by going door to door. Basically, they were just an ice cream shop in Burlington, Vermont. And it seems like they were all about like the whole hippie vibe and spirit and giving back. And they must have known the future was going to be millennials that who really seemed to care about, you know, also like a give back spirit, and that 1% or 5% of their profits that were being donated to causes. I thought that was brilliant alignment of their yeah. brand. So let's just take them for a second. I'm sure you know their case all too well. Sure. They sold out to, I think, Nabisco or RJ or whatever it was. I think it was Nabisco maybe. And then they bought it back. I mean, you know, when a family business, like, and they were very much of a family style business. What happens when, you know, maybe the goal is to get acquired, and then do they realize they've made a mistake, and the family sort of integrity gets destroyed? Because they had some weird things going on there, like the CEOs would never take more than 5 times the amount of compensation that the lowest person was going to get paid. I mean, you could destroy a company's culture like a Ben and Jerry's by making it
Yeah, absolutely. Brand. And I think that's why we always try to have that conversation up front with our clients about like, what is the end game here? You know, because I would say the majority of our clients are looking to run a legacy business. That mm-hmm. is what they want. They want to keep it in the family. They want to keep it closely held. Maybe that at some point they, you know, do some kind of ESOP or, you know, do employee owned or something like that if they need mm-hmm. an exit strategy. But the idea of selling out to the Goliath is not what they want to do. You know, that there's something really important to them about keeping that. But there's definitely the portion that's like, no, you know, the plan is, you know, grow this into a family asset and then get it, make sure that it's positioned for some kind of strategic acquisition. And if that is what you're looking to do, then again, I can't stress enough how important it is to really know your customer better than anyone else, because that is what is going to position your company in a strategic acquisition. And it's what's going to give you leverage to put some of those guardrails into a deal. So I think like Tom's of Maine is a good example you know, all about natural products, all about give back. When they sold the company to Colgate, they were basically saying like, hey, like Colgate, you're acquiring us because you want our customers customers and they will not buy your product.
Right.
The only way you get our customers is by staying true to how we run our business.
Right.
And so they were able to structure a deal where their value was actually enhanced by putting some clear guardrails about what could be done and couldn't be done with the brand. And so the only way you do that is if you have that story, if you have that relationship with a market segment that these large players don't have a hope of connecting with in an authentic way. And so the only way they get that market is by buying somebody who's kind of grassroots cultivated that relationship with the brand, the integrity of the brand, all of that goodwill that they've built up by structuring their company in a certain way, acting in a certain way, living up to those brand promises that are so important and connected to what their customers value, so that when that Goliath's looking at the brand, they see value in keeping that intact. You know, that is the value of the company. And so again, it just becomes, in my mind, even more important to know why you're doing those things and being able to clearly connect that with sales, with profitability, with price sensitivity, with all of these business measures that are going to go into valuing a company for sale. And brand can be a game changer in that, in those deals. You know, it's, you know, we're talking, you know, a 10x multiple, you know, like a huge difference maker in a sale beyond the balance sheet, that is that those intangible assets and goodwill, that is the brand. So,
you know, I know some companies are really interested in uncovering what we call their X factor, you know, what's going to give them like a 10x underlying advantage. And it sounds like coming up with better positioning, making better positioning decisions can really drive their growth. So let's talk about a few ways, maybe some takeaways that people can get from this talk here. What are maybe a few ways that businesses can 2 to 10x their business revenues without selling their souls, without losing their brand identity? What are some ideas that you have for people?
One of them is just like the easiest thing that most companies don't do, which is have those 12 conversations with your customers.
Amazing.
The sooner the better, more regularly, and start looking for patterns. Mm-hmm. Start looking for ways for you to enhance value, for you to create that relationship even tighter, for you to look for opportunities to extend the brand in a way that your customer values. That is the easiest way to have kind of like a fast path to growth, because you're using that asset that you already have, which is those tight relationships with your customers, which again is what family businesses excel at. And I don't know why more companies don't do that.
Right.
But it's just, I mean, it costs nothing. It's so simple. Just like go out and do it.
Dissect that and dive a little deeper into what some of those questions might look like. Because I imagine we talk about like having like a 4-question conversation with them, like, how are we doing? How are our competitors doing? I like the stop, start, continue. Like, what should we start doing? What should we stop doing? What should we continue doing? You know, I guess sort of what are you're trying to get to the, like, what do you hear about us or about others in the marketplace? I mean, is that on the right path there or?
So it's such a good point. Cause sometimes I kind of also take this for granted. So that might be a piece of it, but what I would actually encourage companies to do is to not really talk so much about your brand, but instead to talk to your customer about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
What is their life like? Where do they find products? What social media are they using? How do they use it? How does it fit into their life? What do they like about it? What don't they like about it? You know, that don't talk about your do you like our brand? You know, if you're talking to loyal customers, they're going to, you know, give you some predictable answers about like, oh yeah, I love your brand, it's great. Oh, and they might give you some random ideas, but I think like, was it like Henry Ford was like, if I asked my customers what they would want, they would have said faster horses, right? So you're not, you're not really looking for your customer to give you, you know, brand extension ideas or something like that. You're looking to get a better understanding of what makes your customer tick. Again, like what do they value that is an opportunity for you to create exponential value for them. Mm-hmm. So if you're, you know, if you're talking to, you know, like let's say your company doesn't have a give back program, but as you're having these conversations, you start to see patterns that like, oh, actually like our customers are really, really passionate about the environment. Okay. Maybe we're going to join like a 1% for the planet type, type brand promise. Mm-hmm. You know, it's never anything that we've done before, but you know, we've talked to 12 people and 10 of the 12 are really passionate about environmental causes. Like that feels like a pattern. You don't need them to tell you that, you know, like to come up with the idea of you need to do a give back program. It's also really, really helpful to understand what other brands are in their ecosystem. So like, again, not probably not competitor brands as much as like, you know, like what kind of car do they drive? What, you know, where do they get their coffee? You know, just understand more about how their life works, how they think about brands, what brands they have affinities for, and start to look for patterns. So it's really actually going deeper into your understanding of the customer in a way that's not obvious from how they interact with your brand. You can talk, you can easily dissect like purchase habits and things like that just through your own data. This is more about getting like that soft understanding of where do we create value? What do we value? What do our customers value? And where is that alignment between the two? If that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, I think this is just an enthralling conversation and I want to understand, this is overwhelming probably to a lot of companies. I can only think of the fear that founders or any business owner might have about going through and uncovering all this stuff. I mean, it's like a tangled web of or a ball of yarn, so much to understand and uncover. Like, so how does someone get started with on this process of thinking that this might be the key to uncover some of their growth? How do they get started with you and how do they go about, like, how would you recommend that they go about selecting a creative agency once they've made that decision? So it's a two-part question. Like, at what point is it an inflection point where they're saying, you know, we need to rethink our whole marketing and strategy? And then the second question is how do they go about choosing someone?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the answer to the first question is like, I mean, the process that we have, like our Solve for Why system, like I can show anybody like what those steps are and like the how to go about doing that. Again, it's pretty basic, like change management and change leadership. I think that where companies get stuck is like, oh my gosh, like we got to run this in addition to the day-to-day. We're not skilled at this. We've never done this before. So we might have like a clunky interview with a client and we don't really want to risk that. So that's kind of where like, you know, it's not that companies couldn't do it on their own, but I think like why we exist is that we've done it a bunch of times. And so we know how to do it. So it's like, you know, you can kind of choose to like trial and error and kind of like work through it on your own, or you can have us come in and do it for you. We also have some programs that are kind of like do it with me, almost like coaching programs where you can kind of walk your marketing team through it and kind of like help almost like train them to do it so that they get some professional development out of it. It's really up to whatever works best for the company. You know, there's some companies who are all about like, bootstrapping and they just want to do it themselves and like, just give me the roadmap and I will do it. And that's great. Like you learn a lot from doing it yourself. There's some companies who are like, hey, like I really want to train my people to do this because I want to build this capability internally. I see a long-term need for us to do this over and over again.
Right.
Great. We can help you do that. Some companies are like, hey, like we don't have the time, the bandwidth, and we have the money to say like, you guys just do it for us. You know, that works too. I think that when you're thinking about this kind of initiative and you're trying to figure out what kind of company, you know, I mean, it'd be easy for me to say like, oh, like 6 points, the answer to everybody, but that's not accurate because I think that for our clients, these are companies who are trying to do something drastically different and bigger than they have done before in the past. And their questions are kind of like, they're at this moment where they're stuck. Like they've had circular conversations in leadership team meetings about like, do we do this? Do we not do this? They're not getting off the dime. They're just like stuck in this holding pattern where they see opportunity, but they have no idea about what is the next step to take to go after it. There's some companies who are like, hey, we see the opportunity. We need a packaging upgrade. You know, we see that clearly. We understand what it needs to be. We can direct a firm, you know, then you're just looking for a packaging, you know, a great experienced packaging firm, ideally that has category experience who can just knock it out of the park and execute your vision. Maybe you like other work that they've done, that kind of thing. So I think the biggest difference between like when you need a 6 point versus when you need one of these kind of like specialty execution firms is how clear you are in what you need, your ability to direct, your ability to give them those clear guardrails about this is what our brand does, this is what it doesn't do. Otherwise, if you cannot provide them clarity, I will tell you, and they will tell you, that it will be a bumpy road. Both of you will be frustrated by the end of it, and you'll probably waste a ton of time and money, you know, as either they or you throw things at the wall, and then you're both kind of like, oh, that's not what I wanted. No, try again, try again, try again. It's a really frustrating way to do that work. And that might be, you know, packaging, logo design, you know, website design, search engine optimization, any one of those specialty execution things needs clear direction. They have to have clarity or else they cannot do their job. So you have to be clear about your customer. You have to be clear about what success looks like. If you have that clarity, then that's great. And then it's just, to me, about finding like, who gives you confidence, right? Yeah, you know, it becomes kind of an intangible thing of like, oh yeah, we just click with these people. That's great.
Right.
If you do not have that clarity and if you cannot direct them, then that is our whole reason for being. We're here to kind of like make you into a good client for one of those super specialized firms, or make you into the kind of company that can bring that work in-house and grow it, you know, grow your brand capability in-house. We're that kind of gap filler between that like gray area of, you know, we see the opportunity, we just don't know how to get it. And I think that it's a fun place to be. It's a place that like I love. If I had somebody just telling us what to do all the time, you know, I'd be bored. Our team would be bored.
Right.
So we like those kind of tough problems.
Sounds like it. So I think we have an idea of when someone should call you. But is there an entry level, maybe price point that they should be thinking about? And then what's the best way to reach your firm?
Yeah. So our kind of do it for me programs where we're taking everything and doing it for you start in the like $60,000 to $70,000 range as an investment in that future. If we're doing it more like coaching your team and kind of working with your team to kind of do that, kind of building up their own capacity, but you have the ability to put in some sweat equity, then you're looking at more like $8,000 to $10,000 for a 6 to 12 week program where we'll kind of like work with them and get those basics in place. So So I think like it gives us the ability to work with companies at different life stages, and who are just at different places where they can invest in the brand and also how much internal bandwidth they can put into making something successful. But if you don't have the time or the money, then that would not be a fit.
So. Right. Yeah, good. All right. And so what's the best way for them to reach you?
So I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So definitely, connect with me there. And then also, our website, sixpointcreative.com, we can set up a landing page for your show that I can, send for the show notes, and we can, let people download some resources and, get in touch there. So
great. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Megan. We will have your contact information in the show notes. If there's any giveaways that you want to give away, get those to me and we'll make sure they land on the page as well. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jonathan. I appreciate the conversation.
Sounds good. All right. So if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, share it with others. If you're looking for a great marketing agency that's family focused, then reach out to Six Point Creative. Thanks a lot. This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, the Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.